Welcome to the Billetocrat. I'm Omar Moore. It is Monday, November the 15th, 2021. On this edition of the Billetocrat, the bipartisan infrastructure bill is signed. On quite a wild Monday, I'll be talking mainly on this episode about the signing of the bill and about a number of other things that were taking place on this day. That's coming up right after this. Welcome back. I do want to... This is sad stuff. I want to start with a sad thing. And the sad thing is, unfortunately, that a young boy has succumbed to his fight against, well, he has succumbed to his injuries, and this is really sad to even articulate, quite frankly, for me. I have a profound sense of sadness when people's lives come to an end in the way that they do. Sometimes just brutally, horrifically, other times, you know, in just natural causes. But a life taken is a life taken, and Ezra Blount is no longer with us. He was just 9 years of age. He is the 10th person to die from the injuries during that horrible, horrific stampede and surge at Astroworld. That festival that took place, what, about 10 days ago now? On that Friday night. In fact, it was exactly 10 days ago, you know, November 5th of this year. That was a Friday. And the horrific event that occurred there, where people were being trampled to death and squashed and crushed to death in a surge and a stampede at Astroworld Festival in Houston, Texas, where the rapper... I forgot what his name is, Travis something or other, was performing. So, Ezra Blount, rest in power. You were too young. You were too young. Heartbreaking. It's just heartbreaking, you know. He was actually stamped on and trampled to death in this whole thing. People do not have any humanity at times. Some people do become a pack of animals. I know some people don't like when that's said about human beings. I mean, we are animals. But there are a lot of people who don't like when that is said of human beings. Some of those human beings who don't like that had nothing to say when five young boys in Central Park were being called that every day of the week and twice on Sunday by the news media in New York and across the country and by people all over the place. No one had any problem with that. But anyway, this is just really horrible, this news of Ezra Blount. Really breaks my heart, actually, to learn of this news of a nine-year-old boy, 9 years old, trampled to death, stamped on in this horrible stampede. Look, people are going to have to pay for this. People are going to have to be made accountable for what has been. I mean, this is just this is criminal negligence. It truly is, as far as I'm concerned. So, yeah, this is painful stuff. It's very painful. So I wanted to start with the sad news first, which is something I try to avoid doing, but you can't avoid life and you can't avoid what's going on in the world. And one of the things going on in the world is that poor kid is no longer here. So, and to his family, I send my deepest and most heartfelt condolences here to you. I'm so deeply sorry for your loss. It's going to be a horrible winter for that family and for so many others who've lost a loved one. It's going to be a horrible Christmas for them, horrible holiday season for them, you know? This isn't the way it's supposed to be, you know, but this is how life can be. So with that said, and in a very sorrowful tone, I do wish you all the very best. Dear listener, you know, I hope that you're safe. I hope that you are having a good Monday, that your day thus far has been one that you can look back on at the end of it and go, yeah, you know, this was a pretty good day. If it's not, I hope that tomorrow is better for you, and I hope that life gets better for you. So there we are with the more sad piece of news about this 9-year-old boy. 10 people now, all 10 of them are under the age of 30. All 10 of the people who died in that horrible stampede at Astroworld, all of them were under the age of 30. Every last one of them. Oh, dear, oh, dear. But it was a very, very, I mean, this has been a very, it's been a really crazy day for news. We learned that, at least I learned this, I don't know if you were aware of this, but Kyle Rittenhouse, who is on trial for, I forgot what the charges are now, murder, when he shot and killed the two people that he shot and killed August of 2020, it was on video. I mean, CNN showed it on a loop, you know, and, you know, he tried to kill somebody else as well, and he actually walked down the street saying, I've just killed two people. I bet you that was not admitted into evidence. But the story is that, look, how many of you think he is going to walk? How many of you think he is going to be convicted? I don't see any hands up. I don't see any hands up for the latter one. And I can only imagine that people are saying, I do, for the first choice that I put out there. Rittenhouse is going to walk. We all know that. He's going to walk. We all know that. This guy was selecting alternate jurors. I actually found this out earlier today. Selecting alternate jurors. Well, which trial did that ever happen in? Did those kids in Central Park, did they get to select alternate jurors in their case? That was not even a murder case. It was a horrific case. Horrible case. Rape and, you know, I mean, this poor woman was beaten to within an inch of her life. So I'm not trying to, and I shouldn't even be measuring these things up. But how is it in a murder trial that somebody gets to pick? The defendant gets to pick. Let me correct that. The murderer, the killer, because he killed two people. The killer gets to pick alternate jurors. Have you ever heard of that? I mean, again, those boys in Central Park, they didn't get to pick alternate jurors. They didn't get to pick alternate jurors. Oh, Kyle Rittenhouse is white. And then good old boys in Central Park, the good boys, they're black and Latino. Oh, I see. Oh, America. Oh, America looks at... America, listen to me. Looks at white people differently from black people, and black people differently from white. Oh, that's how it works over here in the land of the free. Oh, okay. Listen, whenever this case goes to the jury, this guy is going to walk. And it would shock me if it took the jury more than a day and a half. Seriously. To find him not guilty. Come on now. This guy's going to walk. He's not going to be convicted of any murder whatsoever. Even though it was caught on video. The judge in the case has been an absolute abomination. The judge has become and throughout this case and trial, I've not watched it. I've only seen clips of it on Twitter. And you can follow me, dear listener, at ThePopcorn, R-E-E-L. But this judge has become, I mean, this is absolutely judicial malpractice. Absolutely judicial malpractice from the bench. This guy is now he has been throughout this trial, for as best as I've read, an auxiliary defense attorney. He has been another defense attorney for Kyle Rittenhouse, and I would use another word that rhymes with writ to describe that piece of garbage. But again, this is when a system shows up and shows out for white male murderers, killers. What the system does, it protects them. I think you know that by now, dear listener. So do not be surprised, whether it's tomorrow, whether it's Wednesday, or whether at the very, very latest it is Thursday, that Kyle Rittenhouse walks, squawks, and balks his way out of any kind of guilty verdict.
Several years ago, he asked me, we were in China, he asked me, he said, could I define America? And I said, absolutely. It's the God's truth. I said, absolutely. I can define it in one word. Possibilities. Possibilities. There is no limit to what our people think we can do. And there is no limit to what our nation can do. And there is no one thing that I know more than this. It's never, ever been a good bet to bet against the American people. Never, never, never. Given half a chance, the American people have never, ever, ever let this nation down. And it's our job to give our people that chance. It's our job to come together and make sure we remain a nation of possibilities. As I look out in this crowd today, I see Democrats and Republicans, national leaders, local leaders, all elected officials, labor leaders, business leaders, and most of all, I see fellow Americans. I see America. Let's remember this day. Let's remember we can't come together. Most of all, let's remember what we've got done for the American people when we do come together. I truly believe that 50 years from now, historians are going to look back at this moment and say, that's the moment America began to win the competition of the 21st century. So with confidence, optimism, with vision and faith in each other, let's believe in possibilities. Let's believe in one another. And let's believe in America. God bless you all, and may God protect our troops. Now let me sign this bipartisan bill.
Yes, I do.
We were wondering when you were going to stop for a moment to have your protest.
I tell you what, I know what you mean. It's the only reason I did stop. Well, folks, I'm going to get you each a pen, but there's 30 of you up here. But I only have one pen.
Hurry, Vice President, please.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay, here we go.
Yeah.
Bravo. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
And thank you, Mr. President. President Biden there. That was earlier today on the South Lawn of the White House signing the bipartisan infrastructure bill. Look, I wish this bill had gone further. I've got issues with some of it, but this is going to help the American public. It will help the infrastructure of this country, which has absolutely been a joke over the last God knows how many decades. This is a significant bill that was signed today. And yes, I know the Republicans and these moderates in that party and the moderates out there in the Democratic land that we have, you know, yes, they were the ones who really authored and anchored this bill. Lots of compromises. It was indeed overseen by a lot of corporate interests, the United States Chamber of Commerce, at the very least of it. And, you know, he being Joe Manchin, has his pockets lined with their money, among other industries, the coal industry as well. And, you know, yeah, there's things about the bill that, yes, you can certainly have some issues over. But overall, this, and I talked about this, I think, last Friday, the Friday before, this bill, when the House passed it, this bill is going to be significantly, this is going to make a significant difference to the infrastructure of this country. Water, electricity, internet, transportation, aviation safety, you name it. There's so many things, you know, billions and billions of dollars going to various areas that need to be improved. This is going to make a difference, okay? There's no question. I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, no, this is something to celebrate. It is something to take note of. And it's a massive victory. If you want to talk about winners and losers, I know the corporate news media loves that. But it is a huge victory for President Biden, and he must run around the country, and he's going to be doing that. He, because last week he was in Baltimore before he even signed the bill. And I was telling you last week, why has he signed it yet? You know, for all of this eagerness to get this thing done, and it did take a while, speaking of eagerness, why hasn't the president signed it yet? And now we see why. Because he wanted to do this on the heels of the, because earlier in the day today, there was a virtual summit, a fairly brief one, albeit a virtual summit with Native American leaders from various Native American nations across this country. I hesitate to call them tribes, but I really do. I don't like that word. But Native American nations, and that's why I say Native American communities, because there's more than one. And they're very distinct and different, and there are dozens upon dozens, as far as I know, different nations, different communities. So there was a summit that was held early today. President Biden, Interior Secretary of the Interior, Deb Haaland, the first Native American to be an official in any United States cabinet for government, they held this virtual summit, and they had a little sneak peek of that. I saw a little bit of it, and it was good. I wish that they had done more. I didn't see all of it, but from what I saw, it was good. And so they did that first, and then the thing after that was going to be sign the infrastructure bill, and they did. They had a load of speeches before the one you just heard there. I played a part of it from President Biden, and then you heard there the actual moment that he signed the ceremony, signed the actual bill into law. And this is going to make a big difference, as I say. This is something that he has to tout. Democrats have to be jumping up and down and touting this. And in fact, dear listener, if you are someone who is trying to get people to vote for next year's midterms, you need to be touting this as well. This is significant. This is much better than anything that the Republicans have done, better than anything that a lot of previous Democratic presidents have done. This is the thing I think that Joe Biden's going to go down in history for. And the thing is, as you know, President Biden is a consensus builder. He is a moderate Democrat. He makes no bones about that. He makes it very clear that, you know, he's someone who is not necessarily liked a lot by progressives. He had the famous meeting just before he was inaugurated. It may have been just after, where he told progressives, look, no, I'm not going to be doing this. He told activists, and he invited them in. They had either a teleconference or a face-to-face. And he made it very clear, nope, there's these things I am not doing. He made it very clear where he stands. Joe Biden is a consensus builder. I've told you this before. I've told you that Joe Biden is more interested in being liked. And that's a fact. It's a fact. I know some people will go, ooh. He's more interested in being liked. Now, it's better than being hated, you know. but he is someone who wants to let everybody feel special, and at least everyone except the progressives. And he wants everybody to have a stake in it. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not sitting here saying that there shouldn't be some compromise. You never get everything you want. But the problem I have, the only brief problem I have, is that most of the country never gets any of what it wants, or at least only gets parts of what it wants. But the rich never go without. And that's the criticism angle I have, is that nobody ever compromises the rich's interests. Nobody ever compromises the interests of the rich. I think that that's something that's very obvious, dear listener. I don't think that I am saying anything that has surprised you so far, thus far, about the way this world works. I've not surprised you any, I don't think. This is really where we are going here. And I do honestly think that President Biden believes in compromise. And in fact, there's a part in the speech I didn't play where he said, nothing ever gets done without compromise. This is how it's got to be. And you know, I agree with that, but I also don't agree with that. I agree with it because it's true in politics that that's what this is. It's about horse trading. It's about negotiating. It's about, well, what can I get you if you sign on to this bill for me and you're a co-sponsor, or if you're somebody who is going to vote for this, what do I need to get your vote? What do I need? What can I give you? That's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. And meanwhile, there are millions upon millions upon millions of people here in the United States who are sitting here with their pockets out empty. Really. I mean, food bank lines still going. Don't let anybody... Listen, this is the holiday season now. Do not be fooled. The fact that you don't have a corporate news media camera in some of these cities and places around the country, urban, rural, whatever, it doesn't mean that these things aren't still happening. Of course there are. There's a pandemic going on. And it's winter. Winter is coming. And it's going to be here soon. So get vaccinated. Get your booster, if it's your turn. And wear a mask or two, because here we are. Rates are going up again in some of these states. And even if they're not going up in your state, they're going down or they're static. Doesn't mean you should just fling your mask off and go, hey, don't do that, dear listener. Please, please, please. And I urge you to tell people you know not to do that. Tell them to get vaccinated. Tell them to get fully vaccinated. Tell them to get their booster. Please do. This is so important. And as I said, this infrastructure bill, let me get back to that, is going to make a difference. It's about roughly 1.2 or 1.5. I always get mixed up. 1.2 trillion or 1.5 trillion. Whatever it is, it's going to make a lot of difference. It is. Roads, bridges, tunnels, rail. I mean, come on. Travel, transportation in general, air, land, sea. I mean, you name it. Grids, new jobs, millions of new jobs, hundreds of thousands of new jobs with wind turbines and all kinds of things. This is going to be very important. It's going to put people back to work. It's going to rejuvenate the economy. It's already been paid for. I talked about the detail of the money, I think last week, the week before. There's no question, dear listener, this is a really significant bill. And if I were President Biden, I would be touting it. In fact, when I speak to voters with these phone banks that I do, and the next time I do them for the midterms and also for these other races, I am going to talk about these things. You have to. And if you get on phone banks, dear listener, please make sure that you do the same. Because it would be a terrible shame if you didn't. You've missed an opportunity if you do not. You've missed an opportunity to tell people that it is vital that they are aware of these things. Because a lot of voters don't know this. They don't have the time to know it, really. It's not because they're stupid. It's because they don't have the time. They don't have the time. And so I think, dear listener, it's imperative upon you, because you listen to this podcast, because you are someone who is tuned in to the ways of the world and the news of the world. You are tuned in the news of the world. I'm trying to mention an ill-fated newspaper from England. But the news of the world, you're tuned into it. You're aware. You're up on it. You know these things. You're in it. You're following it. You're all over it. You need to be telling people, if you haven't already, about voting, about this bill. You need to describe what's in it. You need to tell people how it helps them. You know, you need to do this, because this is how you get to the heart of a voter who doesn't know. And you have to distill it down in under 2 minutes, because people's attention spans are less than what? Literally, by the time you get to a minute and a half, you're pushing it. Seriously, you're really pushing it with people. The average person doesn't have 2 minutes to sit down, really, and just hear something. That's why soundbite culture exists. That's not the only reason why soundbites are destructive, because it's just one little bite of something out of context. That's why I tried to play, when I play speeches here, dear listener. I try to play all of them almost all the time, and I did not do that with President Biden, but I did play at least a minute and a half to 2 minutes of it, plus the signing of the bill. That happened earlier today. Very, very significant indeed, and from what I know, President Biden will be touring all over the place the next few days. In fact, as I said, he's already started doing that. He did it in Baltimore last week, Baltimore, Maryland. He's going to be, as you heard him in the speech, maybe, if you didn't hear it, one of the things he did say in the speech, whether you heard it just now or not, I'm not sure if I even played that part of it. He said he's going to be going to New Hampshire. He's going to be doing a number of things this week. So look out for that. And I would advise all of these folks who are running for office who are Democrats, tout this bill, talk it up. Don't sit there with mealy-mouthed assertions. You need to really push this bill. And if you want to push that some Republicans helped with it, then so be it. I mean, quite frankly, I do not think that makes a whole heck of a lot of difference to people. I don't think the average human being in the United States is sitting around going, oh, well, wow, Republicans joined it too. I mean, that's only for the media and some of us who are really closely following all this stuff. But generally speaking, the average person who is not in touch with the day-to-day does not have any interest in whether Republicans joined in or not. They just want to know that on their kitchen table, there's going to be food and that there's going to be a roof over that food, over their heads. You know what I mean? I mean, that's really what this is about. And they don't have time to think about who's doing what in Washington, who's up, who's down, and all this nonsense. That's why the coverage is so horrible here. We need a better media in this country, media that you deserve. And the media is playing below your intelligence, way below it. And you get dumber by watching it. And I'm talking about all of them. Fox, forget it. It's a bunch of lies. The rest of them, they're playing down. Now, again, there's some of them that do good analysis on some of these other networks. But you need news. You don't need titillation. You don't need entertainment. You can get that elsewhere. You don't get it from watching news. You should never get titillation and entertainment from freaking news. Because it's what you need to know. Not what you want to know. Not what you fantasize about wanting to know. But about what you need to know. It's what the news is. It's what the news should be. It used to be that here in the United States. And I'm not going to go over the whole reasons why that has now changed. Reagan, 87, FCC Fairness Doctrine, Clinton, 96, Telecommunications Act. I'm not going to go through all that again now because I've done it a billion times. I'll do it another day, but not now. But that is your infrastructure bill, dear listener. And it's bipartisan, which is what President Biden wanted. I mean, this is going to be the thing that he... Now, Build Back Better, to me, is more important because it's going to be about paid family leave. It's going to be about medical benefits, extensions of those, more affordable health care, although, of course, I wish it were Medicare for all. Had there been a President Bernie Sanders, there would be a real push for it, but he'd have an uphill fight because you'd have a lot of Democrats going at him too, but as well as Republicans. But the point is that Build Back Better now is the priority, as is voting rights. Now, President Biden's going to do his tour around the country, and he should, and they're going to be, the vice president's going to do the same. But the bottom line is now, I think for the rest of us here in the United States, bravo to getting this bill done. Again, it's not everything I wanted. I would have loved a lot more, but it's a really good start. The kind of money that's being spent in these very important areas is going to make this country more secure and safe. And it's going to run better. You're going to have more broadband in the neighborhoods that need it, better broadband. You're going to have all kinds of very important things. Clean drinking water, hello. In all these cities around this country where that has not happened, Flint, Pittsburgh, Newark, hello, I can go on and on. So this bill is going to make a difference. It's going to, believe me. But again, yeah, the corporates are going to have their earmarks on it, as they do. And that's the one. That's one of the things that I don't take to kindly enough. I really don't take to it. But anyway, that's the infrastructure bill. I've got one or two things to say. Because by the way, before I go to the break, as I think I was saying earlier, there were a number of people who spoke before President Biden did. You had a worker who spoke. You had a mayor of a town here in California who spoke. Fontana, California. I don't even know where that is. Is that north? I guess it's south of here. I don't know. I'll have to look. My geography should be better about the state, but it is not right now. Then you had another woman speaking. And I thought, you know, yeah, there are these two black women who are speaking. And you put them out there. But where's the Build Back Better bill that's going to benefit black women and black families and all families? Black families, white families, Latino, Asian. The Build Back Better bill is going, if it's done right and it's not watered down, like this kind of was to a degree, if it's done right, then it will absolutely benefit everybody. Everybody. Everyone. To put a quote on the, well, to recall the film, The Professional, excuse me, with Gary Oldman, when he screams out the word, everyone. I mean, he's, anyway, that's a whole nother story. But it's going to benefit everyone, dear listener. If this bill is done right and it is a, and there's a vote on it in the Senate, good luck. You know, President Biden thinks he's got the votes. He's very confident to get these votes. And if he does get the votes, I hope he does, then we could have a really special bill. That's the one you really want to celebrate, as well as this one. But it remains to be seen if it's going to happen, dear listener. It remains to be seen, and we will see about it. As I said, there were a number of people that spoke before Mr. President Biden did. Vice President Harris spoke as well. You know, as I said, the two black women spoke, one of them the mayor of Fontana, California. And I said, yeah, you know, you trot out these two black women here. But, you know, there are other areas, like when we come to vote, where are you on that? Where are you on it? You know, the Voting Rights Act, this bill, rather the John Lewis bill, has to be voted on. Come on now. You know, come on. Then show me some black women then, you know. I mean, all black women are doing is getting arrested every freaking day. It doesn't even get the coverage anymore. It didn't even really get much coverage to begin with. Not the way it should have. And all I'm seeing on my freaking TV, even when I'm flicking through the channels, is blooming Carl Crappenhouse, who was all over the bloody TV. I do not want to see him. I don't want to see him, dear listener. I really don't. Just go away and go to jail. We know he's not going to go anywhere but home like he did in 2020 when he just was allowed to just waltz out of the state of Wisconsin back over state lines to Illinois. Yeah, you know, I just killed two people. I don't hear you. I just killed two people. I don't hear you. I just killed two people. I don't hear you. Bride of Deluxe from Cliff Martinez from the film Drive. Welcome back, dear listener. I hope you're well on this Monday. I hope you are. And the first block was dedicated to, in large part, the infrastructure bill, the bipartisan infrastructure bill. And that's what we do. You know, we do get things done in this country every now and again that does actually benefit. Gosh, talk about present tense and past tenses, and ooh, gosh, I'm all over that today, aren't I? We do get things done in this country, though. The voters in November of 2020 proved that. The voters in January of 2021 proved that in Georgia. And here we are again in 2021 also, where you actually got two political parties to get together on something that actually helps people. I mean, the defense industry does not help the average American, right? That is a military industrial complex unto itself, the military industrial complex, which is not complex at all. It's very clear what they do, but you know what I mean. When that bill was passed about a year ago, when I always get mixed up with what, I'll have to one day, dear listener, actually get the date so that I'm not speculating on whether it was January of this year or November of last. I do believe it was November or December of last year, 2020. But the point is, that was completely bipartisan. There was only, I think, six senators that voted nay. And those were the Democratic senators, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, among others. Jeff Merkley was in there, and Ed Markey was in there. I think that was the four. There may have been a couple more. But by and large, you know, there used to be, and I want to just take people back a bit before I go on to the next subject, just briefly, because they didn't mention this in the beginning. People have to understand that in decades past, there was much more compromise, much more situations where there was so-called compromise. Now, you don't want to compromise your life away, because sometimes I think that there are politicians who get so comfortable with compromising. I'm not naming any names. Oh, I want to, but I won't. There are people that get so compromised. Yeah, that too. Freudian slip. They get so comfortable with compromising that they end up putting everybody in a compromising position, but in a really bad compromising position that ends up really screwing all of us. I mean, it really does. We get put, and it's anyway at the risk of being more cynical than usual. We do get put into these positions, dear listener, and it's not something that I think that we should just stay quiet about. As I was saying, there are years in the past where there wasn't this big show of bipartisanship because it was just happening. I mean, I go back to Reagan, and I know even during that time, Ronald Reagan did so much damage to this country, by the way. He really did. We're still trying to dig out from under Reaganism. I'm not kidding. We are still, and Reaganomics and all that nonsense, we're still digging out from the effects of that 40 years on. He came into office in 1981, you know, 40 years ago. And my God, we are still digging out. No one talks about that anymore. Everyone talks immediately about the piece of garbage that left the White House earlier in the beginning of the year. That's where the focus is. But we need to, again, as I'm a big proponent of this, as you know, if I can speak properly today. Ah, dear. Dear listener, I am a big proponent of looking at context, because I do not think that just looking at the surface, that what's right in front of you, is enough. I know that that's how most of us operate in this world. We look at and what's immediately in front of us without really looking back too much. I think there's some of us who do look back and look at the bigger contextual stage and picture, but so many everyday persons out here, the average person does not do that. All they know is that they need to feed their kids. All they know is that they need to have the rent check or the mortgage check ready. All they know is that they need to get some health care fast. All they know is that they've got premiums to pay. That's what the average person in this country does. And it, you know, because we're the only country that ties healthcare to a job. Oh, great. Woohoo. But there were times back in the Reagan years, Tip O'Neill, the Democratic House Speaker, and the Republican President Reagan, traitor. I mean, he committed treason. Listen, don't let the hostages release in Iran, because these American hostages, they can wait a few more months. Just wait a few more weeks until I get in. And that's what happened. Then they released them. I'm not joking. I'm in there, you know, anyway. But there was some comedy amongst people during the 80s at some point. In the 1980s, there tended to be more people of both parties voting for things with equal fervor, not exactly equal. And then there were times, of course, when the Democrats dominated the Senate and House so much that things were going through, you know. But the point is that we are living in, look, we've always lived in fractured times in the United States, and a great many other countries have experienced this too. But I just wanted to say that, you know, this bipartisanship thing is something that President Biden relishes. He's always been like this. He's been like this since he came into the Senate in 1971 and 72, and worked with racists like Eastland, the segregationist in the South, with racists like Strom Thurmond, the segregationist in the South, and also a Klan member. He's done this forever, Joe Biden. Yeah, I mean, really. He's been there for a long time in government. Public service, nothing wrong with that. I think public service is a really good thing. But as I said, President Biden wants to be liked. That's, I mean, really. And he wants compromise. I think he genuinely believes in that because that's what his whole career has been in politics. But he wants to be liked. He wants to go down, in my view, as someone who wants to be liked, who was a consensus builder because that's what he is. But the problem is that while he may be a consensus builder, he's someone who steps on us. You know, I told you this before, dear listener. You're fed up of me saying it. You know, Anita Hill, I can go back to that in 1991 when Joe Biden was the senator, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and what he did with Anita Hill. Can't let the witnesses testify. Boom. You know, there's no compromise there. He puts an iron fist down and says, no, black woman, you can't have your witnesses. And then Clarence Thomas gets on the Supreme Court. There you go. I mean, so, I can go on the whole history of how when it comes to us, you know, we get stiffed at, you know, it's at our expense. Compromise. You know, there's no compromise there. No negotiation with Professor Anita Hill. And I know she has now, in the last year or so, said that she has forgiven him. But I know that she doesn't forget. And nor have I. I never forgot that. She didn't get to have her witnesses? Anyway, yeah, but you know, but infrastructure bill, I'll compromise. You know, we'll do, I'll, you know, but that, anyway, that's the whole thing. This is what politics is. It is about compromise. At least this system is, when it comes to compromising to keep the interests of the rich intact. And here's another group, by the way. I talked about black women and black folk, but black women particularly, that there's no compromise when it comes to President Biden or anyone else, quite frankly. You know, the other group that I said this before, just a few minutes before, that doesn't have to have anything compromised? The rich. The rich don't have any issues with there's no one talking about, you know, President Biden isn't talking about compromising anything for them. Granted, the rich are going to pay more and pay more of their fair share, as opposed to none of their fair share, an unfair share of zero, because they don't pay any friggin' taxes in federal income tax. But there's, other than that, there's no compromise. That's not even a compromise. Them doing what they freaking well should be doing, right? I mean, come on. We know this, dear listener, that this is how this works. The rich and their interests, and the interests of the rich. Now, if you are listening to this and you think you're rich, then you tell me if your wealth amounts to more than $500 billion. Tell me if your wealth amounts to $10 billion. Tell me if your wealth amounts to $700 million. I bet you it doesn't. Bet you it doesn't. But these are the people who aren't paying any taxes. They're not paying any tax. People even who earn less than that a year. People who earn half a million dollars a year. Half a billion dollars a year. They're not paying tax. A lot of these people who are making, you know, a million a year, they're not paying much of any tax. So it's not even a question of them compromising anything. It's them paying what they should have been paying a long time ago. As you know, the tax bracket for the rich in this country back in the days of Eisenhower and the days of Kennedy and the days of LBJ, it had been something around, at least Eisenhower into Kennedy, it had been about 96%. 96% for the rich. 96. What is it now for the rich? Zero, pretty much. I mean, but this is, again, this comes from Reaganomics and everything else. And lo and behold, as I told you, we're still digging out from Reagan. No one will tell you that. Very few people will tell you that we're still digging out from him, and we are. So anyway, that is that in a nutshell. As I go on a bit ad infinitum here, let me just add something that I really would love to add here, and I want to say this and make this really clear. There was a shooting in Aurora, Colorado earlier today, and the problem here, again, is what we've seen in Aurora, Colorado before with the Dark Knight Rises shooting that occurred during that movie, inside the movie theater. the guy was wearing a Joker's outfit or something, and or had a Joker's makeup on or whatever, and then dyed hair like the Joker. I mean, whether it, you know, whether it's Aurora, whether it's Detroit, whether it's Oakland, California, whether it's St. Louis, Missouri, whether it's Sugarland, Texas, wherever the heck it is, there are shootings every day in this country, and some of them are mass shootings. I think it's defined as three or more people or four or more people being shot. They don't have to be killed, shot. Listen to me. Listen to even the way that I'm describing this. It just illustrates the madness and the psychopathy of the country. It really does. A mass shooting is defined as three or more people getting shot. I mean, this is just freaking nuts, don't you think? Nespa? This is just absolutely bizarre. We can't live like this. But we have been living like this for too long. And in the UK, it's knife crime. In London, it's knife crime. And these black kids in London who are just absolutely... It's a horror, I tell you. It really is. If you do not know who Damilola Taylor was, notice the word was there. You need to go look that name up. Damilola Taylor. D-A-M as in Mike. I-L-O-L-A. Taylor, the common spelling of the last name. Look that name up, please. Heartbreaking stuff. It's heartbreaking. And that's happening all over London and other parts of England. Manchester, Liverpool, Oldham, parts of Bristol, Birmingham. I can go through all the cities in England. Knife crime is up. This is just, it's horrible. And we've got to just get all this out of control. And here in the UK, yeah, in the US, this shooting, and apparently a few people were injured in this shooting at a school or in a park or something like that. I think it's in a park. The bottom line is we need to join organizations. Like, and I've talked about this even before the shooting happened with Every Town for Gun Safety and Mums Demand Action. We need to join these kinds of organizations. Donate to them, volunteer, join them. These are organizations that fight for gun sense legislation. They fight really hard. They work extremely hard. Shannon Watts, who is the head of and I think the founder of Mums Demand Action. These are groups you need to be getting in touch with and connecting with. And there are other groups, but those are the two that I know because I, you know, I've donated them and all kinds of things in terms of that. You know, it's really important because we've got to get involved. No more of this thoughts and prayers stuff. I mean, that's just way out. I think even the Republicans who kept saying that garbage when they were the ones with their bloody hands in the pockets of the bloody NRA for their money, for their money, even they have stopped saying that for the most part now because they know the jig is up on them. So that is how that works here on this here, in this here country. And, well, you know, I just hope that the people who were shot and wherever you are in the world, if you have gun violence or knife violence, again, I just say, I just hope you pull through wherever you are, whomever the targets are, whomever the people are who get targeted and shot or stabbed. I just hope that people pull through. It's just horrible. We need to be a civilized society, and this is not it. And having guns up the wazoo here in the United States, even though we have less guns here than they do in Canada up the across the border, you know, we've got to get this under control. And the gun lobby won't let that happen. And politicians won't let it happen because they're getting lots of money from the gun lobby and from dark money and the rest of it. Oh, dear. There's so much that happened today, you know, and is continuing to happen. And one other thing before I do say adieu is that Senator Patrick Leahy out of Vermont, the Democrat who's been in the Senate now for an awfully long time. Yeah, he has announced his retirement. My goodness. So he will be departing, I think, either at the end of this year or the end of next year. I forget which. So I don't remember. I don't know. Or what's going to be done with that when I did not get the detail before I did this particular episode, dear listener. So, you know, I'll have to get that detail to you at some point. But that is the story, you know, a Democrat resigning from the Senate. Now there's going to be another seat up for grabs unless there's going to be a governor in, well, there is a governor in Vermont who's going to appoint someone for the duration of Senator Leahy's term, if he's leaving effective immediately or not. He was giving the speech earlier this morning, actually, and he talked about retiring, although he didn't mention the word. He just said, it's time for me to go home, to come home. And so, you know, he's been in the Senate for a long time. I mean, he was there for Iran-Contra in 83. He was there for the, I think he was in that committee, Intelligence Committee. He was definitely in the Senate Judiciary Committee for the Clarence Thomas hearings in 1991. Senator Patrick Leahy has been there for a long time. You know, he was actually in there during the infamous 2001 certification of the vote, where all the black House members of the House of Representatives stood up and said, we are challenging these George W. war criminal Bush. Well, he wasn't war criminal yet. He was going to become one 2 years later in 2003 with Iraq and all. But we are challenging George, I stole the election, W. Bush, because these results in Florida. Come on now. You had the Secretary of State of Florida, Catherine Harris at the time, steal, purged 90,000 black folk off the voting rolls. Greg Palast's report on this forever. And she actually got a chance to run for a House seat out of that. I don't think she won. I don't remember. Or she, you know, whatever it happened. But, because that was the payoff. Well, if you steal this thing for me, you get to run for this House seat and we'll back you. I mean, that's how these things get done, dear listener. It's not even being cynical. This is what happens. But the point is that, you know, Patrick Leahy has been around for a long time, and happy retirement to him. I hope he sails off into the sunset and does good things and enjoys the rest of his life with his wife and, you know, with his family and all. I think that's really important. It really is, spending time. And some people just don't know when to quit these things, you know, and Senator Leahy's, what, is nearly 80, I think. He's up there, so, or he's pretty much 80, I think. You know, you got a lot of senators now who are in their upper 70s into their 80s, and 80s is really when I think you should be enjoying the rest of your life. But you know, power is an aphrodisiac, and there are people who love power, and why not? Because it's power, right? Because power. And so that's what's happened. That is what has happened, dear listener. And you've got people who, this is what Strom Thurmond stayed in until he was 99 or 100, you know. So this is what goes on, dear listener. And I wish Senator Patrick Leahy, who has been on the right side of more issues than he has been on the wrong side of them, I wish him the very best and his family. Now, by the way, Leahy is also one of the people that said who was on the Senate Judiciary Committee for the Clarence Thomas hearings. And like I say, he, you know, for the most part, he's definitely done far more good than not. And so, again, I wish him all the very best as the senior senator of Vermont. And he will be retiring. I don't forget when, but he's going to be retiring. Certainly won't be running for re-election. And that now makes it 35 Senate seats that are up for grabs now for the 2022 midterms. That now is 20 Republicans and now 15 Democrats. Their seats, 20 Republican seats, 15 Democratic seats up for grabs. I will be talking about that as we get closer and closer. And also, by the way, I almost forgot, Beto O'Rourke is running for governor in Texas. That's the other piece of news I was just about to forget, but I thankfully didn't. He announced in a really good video early today that he was running for governor against Greg Abbott. Well, unless Greg Abbott doesn't have a third term to run for. I think it's two terms and you're out. I'm not sure. But the bottom line is Beto is running for governor. And I love the ad that he did. Maybe I'll play that in tomorrow's episode or so. But I felt that this episode was much more to be geared about the infrastructure bill, because it is a major, massive thing. And it cannot be overlooked and it cannot be poo-pooed. Certainly very much. Because, yeah, of course, I would love to see more in it and more kinds of things in it. But what is in there is pretty damn good. And we really should be backing it and backing President Biden on it. I tell you, when there are things that people do correct, I'm going to absolutely sing the praises of it and tout it and go on about it. And when people don't, I'm going to not sing the praises of it and go on about it. So this one was a big victory for the country. It wasn't just a big victory for President Biden. It's a big victory for the United States to have a president that actually cares about infrastructure and actually wants to do something about it, bipartisan or not. I wish there wasn't such a big emphasis on bipartisan. The emphasis should be on helping people. And I mean, you can do both. You can be in there. You can emphasize bipartisanship and you can help people. I get that. But look, the point is that this is an important bill. It's now law and it's going to benefit us here in the United States for sure. It really, really will. And congratulations to everybody who got involved in that. You know, I really, really, even though, again, I have my quibbles and, you know, you've heard me criticize aforementioned persons in other episodes. But this was a major victory for the country earlier today. So that is it for now, dear listener. That is it for now. And I want to say thank you very much for listening to this edition of The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore.